of your mind so that you can see the hope that this call holds for you, the promised glories of God's holy ones that they will inherit, and the infinitely great power that is exercised for us who believe. May God help us to understand this word from our Holy Scriptures. If you need to turn your seats this way and that's more comfortable, please do so to make it easier so you have something behind your back. What's that? You know what? It's lovely here because I can hear you singing better for some reason, like on Friday night. You guys can sing. This is maybe an unusual way to start a sermon, but this is my first statement. Human beings are self-centered. Human beings are self-centered. Every single one of us. That should come as no surprise to anyone. We are born self-centered, programmed only to meet our own needs. We cry, whine, and wheedle to get what we want and need. That's natural. That's the way it works. And necessary. If we didn't figure out ways to meet our needs, we'd either die or never become independent. Always dependent on somebody else to look after us. And neither are good alternatives. So being self-centered is not only necessary, but it's actually good. It's what keeps us healthy, alive, and functioning in the world without putting the burden of care for us on others. However, there are varying degrees and expressions of self-centeredness. On the one end of the spectrum, you have those who are so extremely self-centered that they selfishly scheme all the time to get their needs met at the expense of and even destruction of others. They care really only for themselves. Some might call these people narcissists or sociopaths, psychopaths. And then there's the other extreme. People who focus so much on other people's needs that they ignore their only needs to their own detriment. They either burn out or become dependent on others to look after them while they are busy looking after everybody else. And no matter which end of the spectrum you're on, you can see how they are both destructive and extremely unhealthy. To be so self-centered you don't care about anybody else, or to be so other-centered that you don't care about yourself. So let's not pretend that we don't have, as human beings, agendas. We do. Our goal in life is to survive by finding ways to meet our own needs. And someone will do that in ways that benefit others around them, and some will do it in ways that primarily benefit themselves. And the difference is colossal. One makes the world a better place, and the other can be incredibly destructive to the world. The healthiest self-centered person is the one who understands not only their own needs, and finds appropriate ways to meet their needs, they won't do it and harm others or the environment. They recognize that they need others to live well and tend to creation. So they strive to build healthy relationships for the sake of not only survival, but satisfaction in life. When we all work together to make sure that everyone's needs are met, we are building a world that is stronger, more resilient, and healthy. Healthy people neither take more or less than they need, nor do they give more than they have to give of their resources, their energy, their time. They're balanced, have healthy boundaries, and clear about what they can and cannot be and do. Not because we don't want more. Most of us never realize in our lives when we have enough. Think about that. Most of us never realize when we have enough. Most people always want more of something. World preservation, though, depends on us not having everything we want. And that's something we're letting get out of control these days. We have to learn that the world does not revolve around us. How often do we get angry with others when they interfere with our plans, even when most of the time people really aren't thinking about us at all? We do it all the time. This week, my brother was telling this story, and I just about fell off my seat when he told it. I thought it was funny. It didn't look good on him, but I thought it was pretty funny and was laughing about it. I did ask him if I could tell the story, though. He and his partner own a bakery, and often he has to run out and pick up something for his partner, who is the baker, at the grocery store. And he doesn't mind buying groceries, but when it's for work, he's in a hurry. So last week, he was in the grocery store, and somebody had parked their grocery cart right in the middle of the aisle, which happens quite often. And instead of politely saying to this person, "Excuse me, could I just get by?" he stood there waiting for her to see him. Fuming. And when she did see him, he was glaring at her. And she kind of said, I'm in your way, and pulled her grocery cart to the side. And as he's passing, she says, "I'm sorry." And then under her breath, just loud enough for him to hear, "I think." We get so deeply annoyed with people who seem oblivious to others, even though we do it sometimes ourselves, because we are self-centered. Both were in their own little worlds, and both were annoyed by the other, as if one was deliberately acting that way toward the other. How many of us, when we're cut off in traffic, take it personally? As if they're being rude to us. They're not being rude to us. They're just being self-centered and completely oblivious to anybody but themselves. We'll never know the reason for that. But one of the things that is vital to a healthy world and a healthy ego is to learn to help others meet their needs as well as our own. When everyone's material, mental, social, and emotional needs are met, it creates a better world and better conditions for the well-being of all. Good environments create good people. This is why I don't understand our leaders today, why they aren't helping their citizens to live well, because when they do, it creates such a good society. The Apostle Paul, in his letter to the Ephesians, has a mission to build up faith communities that are supportive, caring, and outward focused, not self-centered. He was intent on establishing and building communities that followed the way of Christ. Paul, however, was not always like this. He was at one time a religious, rule-following, judgmental, self-righteous, self-centered extremist. That was Paul. In the early days of the Jesus followers, he set out to single-handedly wipe out the whole movement of Jesus followers. But when he met Christ, all of that changed. It is one of the most dramatic conversions you'll ever read about, because Paul went from a self-centered person to a Christ-centered person. His heart softened. He felt the call of God to build up communities of love and grace, of forgiveness and generosity. Communities that supported each other and knew that living in a self-centered world was no way to live or thrive. Paul realized very early in his ministry that to promote God's way, he would need to gather communities together to do it. Because Paul lived in an intensely fractured and destructive world, politically, economically, and religiously. There will always be those kinds of forces in the world that will try to fracture the world. Today is no different than Paul's day. Once Paul realized that a relationship to Christ was central to a better, healthier, more livable world, he also understood that creating that kind of world required us to come together and care for each other. I know of no better community to counteract the self-centeredness of this world than those that teach and follow the way of love, the way of Jesus. And I believe all faith traditions have something to offer the world. I do. I don't believe we're exclusively carrying the truth in our faith tradition. But I also believe that the Christ tradition is the only community in the entire world that bases its entire ministry on love. That we hold that as our central value in our communities. Paul's vision was to build these kinds of communities. He knew that these communities were the hope of the world and that he couldn't do it alone. The community of Jesus followers is only as good as the ministers in the community. That's you and me. We're all ministers. The Bible makes that clear. We are all ministers. Paul was greatly and deeply grateful for the people who joined him in the ministry. So he wrote often in his letters to these communities, "I have never stopped thanking God for you." We have to continue to create together the world that we dream of. We find like-minded people who come together to push back at the self-centeredness of the world, to push back at our own self-centeredness. That's what community does, challenges us not to be self-centered. We need places that promote healthy values and pass them on through the generations. And there are fewer and fewer places in the world that will do this. So, since we're at tables today, I think we're just going to take a few minutes now. Because what I hear many people say in the church, we need young families. We need young people in the church. I hear it all the time. How do we do that? So, I'm going to ask you for a few minutes in your table, what do we do now that would attract young families, young people? And what could we do? And you have little cards on your table. If somebody would write down a few of these ideas, I would appreciate it. What do we do that would attract young families and young people? What could we be doing to do that? Some of you are chattering away. Some of you seem to be done, had some ideas. If you wouldn't mind leaving your cards on the table, whatever you've written down, and we'll collect them later. You may have some great ideas that we could implement here. Sometimes I just make people fall asleep. It's my soothing voice. I'm sure you've had some great conversations, and it does my heart good to see you having these conversations around the table. Maybe I just won't get you stopped. That would be loud. Yeah, we'll collect those in a bit. Today, like Paul, I want to acknowledge my deep gratitude for you and your faithfulness, for calling me 19 years ago to partner with you in this work, and for the many ways that we have supported each other to do new things, challenge old ways, and forge forward, even when we didn't know at that time what was ahead, like floods and COVID and all that kind of thing. For the past 19 years, we have been a team. I am one among many ministers in this congregation. I couldn't have done what I did without you. You are truly amazing. I'm also resigned to the fact that I'll probably cry every day for the next month. Thank you for being community together and for being friends. The best communities will challenge and continue to love each other, even if we don't always like each other. And that happens too. But you have been the community of faith and love for me. It is not enough. But for now, all I can say is, like Paul, I will never stop giving thanks for you. I've asked for a picture of both communities. One got taken a couple of weeks ago here, and I've asked St. Andrews and DeWitton to do so as well. You will be tucked in my bag when I go to France. You will be going with me because you supported me in going. Maybe I'll do like the, you know, the flat Stanleys where you take a picture with you on my trip with me. Put it on a, oh, great idea. Pictures on a shirt. Oh, okay, Beth, on a t-shirt to take with me. Yes, even better. Okay, great. Yes. Okay, sorry, we're just having a little conversation here. This is a great idea. Okay. Yeah, that's what community does. It just comes up with good ideas. Yes, so many good ideas. Yes. Let's join in singing our next...